Chapter 1. A Feast of Ashes. The ceremonial drum pounds a rhythm against Alara's ribs. Thump, thump. A second mocking heart. She stands at the edge of the celebration, a ghost haunting the edges of the firelight, her own pack, and she feels like a complete stranger. The air, thick with the scent of roasted boar and pine smoke, feels thin in her lungs, refusing to give her a full breath. Everyone is laughing, their faces glowing with borrowed light and too much moon petal wine. They are celebrating a life she was supposed to have. From this distance, Liam looks like a king. He stands on the Alpha's dais, his arm wrapped around Clara, his new mate, his chosen. Clara is radiant, her belly already showing the gentle swell of a promised future, a future Liam had sworn belonged to them. Her laughter is like silver bells. Alara's own laughter died months ago, replaced by a hollow ache that lives deep in her bones. She wraps her arms around herself, a useless shield against the whispers that slither through the crowd like snakes in tall grass. Damaged. The word follows her everywhere. It was first spoken by the pack healer, a sterile, pitying verdict that had shattered her world. The moon goddess has not blessed your womb, child. It is dormant. Dormant, a pretty word for broken, a gentle term for useless. Liam had used a different word when he'd cast her aside. He'd called her damaged goods, his voice casual, as if discussing a lame horse not fit for breeding. And because he was the Alpha's son, the pack had adopted his cruelty as their truth. Now, they look at her with a mix of pity and scorn. She is a cautionary tale whispered to young she-wolves. Be fertile, be whole. Don't be an Alara. A fresh wave of nausea rolls through her. She needs to leave. She cannot stand here and watch him place the Luna mark on another's neck. Survival depends on escape. Turning on her heel, she tries to melt back into the shadows of the ancient oaks that ring the clearing, a feat she has become quite good at. But a voice, smooth and condescending, stops her cold. Leaving so soon, Alara? It's Liam. Of course it is. He and Clara have cornered her, their joined presence a towering monument to her failure. Clara's smile is sickly sweet, a mask of sympathy that doesn't reach her triumphant eyes. We just wanted to make sure you were all right, Clara purrs, placing a possessive hand on Liam's chest. We know this must be difficult. Difficult doesn't even begin to cover it. It's like being flayed alive, one tiny strip of skin at a time. Alara clenches her jaw, forcing a blankness onto her face she doesn't feel. I'm fine. Congratulations. The words taste like ash in her mouth. Liam's expression is one of indulgent condescension, the look he'd give a pup who'd lost a training match. There's no need to be like that. This isn't personal. The pack needs a future. It needs heirs. His gaze drops to her flat stomach, a final brutal reminder of her emptiness. You understand. She doesn't. She never will. How could he not see this was the ultimate betrayal? He wasn't just choosing another mate. He was validating the world's belief that she was worthless. Just as she opens her mouth to say something, anything, that will wipe that smug pity from his face, the entire world shifts. It starts with the wind, a sudden chilling gust that makes the bonfire roar and spit embers, sending shadows dancing like demons. The happy chatter of the pack dies in an instant. A deep, resonant tremor runs through the earth beneath their feet, not a quake, but a vibration of immense power approaching. Above them, the stars themselves seem to shrink away, the moon veiled by a sudden, unnatural darkness. Every wolf in the clearing freezes, their instincts screaming a single primal warning. Something ancient is here, something powerful. And then, from the deepest shadows beyond the firelight, a figure emerges, and the world stops breathing. Chapter 2. The Golden Gaze of a King. He was a giant carved from night and fury, taller than any wolf she had ever seen, with shoulders broad enough to carry the weight of the world. He moved with a fluid deadliness that made the pack's strongest warriors look like clumsy pups. He wasn't a wolf. He was more. His presence sucked all the warmth from the air, replacing it with an electric tension that smelled of ozone and old magic. This was the Lycan King, a myth made flesh. And he had just witnessed her deepest humiliation. His eyes, they weren't brown or blue or black. They were the color of molten gold, filled with an ancient intelligence and a terrifying stillness. Those eyes swept over the pathetic scene, Liam's smug posture, Clara's cruel smile, and Alara's own frozen despair. Nothing escaped his notice. The silence in the clearing was absolute, broken only by the crackle of the fire. Even the Alpha seemed frozen in place, a statue in his own territory. This was because the king radiated an authority that was absolute, a power that didn't need to be announced. He took another slow, deliberate step forward. The movement was so quiet, yet it felt like a thunderclap. His gaze finally settled on Liam, and the contempt in it was a physical force. He didn't raise his voice. He didn't have to. The words rumbled from his chest, low and dangerous, like rocks grinding deep within the earth. "Is this the strength of the Silver Moon Pack?" he asked, the question a whipcrack in the stillness. "Publicly tormenting the wounded?" He looked from Liam to Clara, his lip curling in a faint, predatory snarl. Pathetic. The word spoken with such finality shattered Liam's composure. The Alpha's son, who had held her entire world in his hands just moments ago, shrank under that golden gaze. He stammered, trying to form a defense, but no sound came out. Clara clutched his arm, her triumphant smirk gone, replaced by a pale mask of fear. The king had rendered them insignificant with a single word. He dismissed them without a second glance, as if they were nothing more than annoying insects. Then he turned to her. Alara's breath caught in her throat. The full weight of his attention fell upon her, and it was a terrifying, suffocating force. It felt like being seen, truly seen, for the first time. He wasn't looking at a barren she-wolf. He wasn't looking at a broken thing to be pitied. His gaze was intense, searching, as if he were peering directly into her soul, past all the scars and the shame, to the furious, caged wolf she kept hidden inside. There was a flicker of something in those golden depths. Recognition? It was impossible. But it was there. This strange, unnerving feeling that he already knew her. The moment stretched, a fragile thread of tension in a world that had gone silent. He was a storm on the horizon, a promise of chaos she couldn't possibly comprehend. What did he want? Why was he here? The question swirled in her mind, a frantic, dizzying dance. Why would a king of his stature care about the humiliation of one lone, rejected she-wolf? It made no sense. His presence here was an omen, and his defense of her. That was something else entirely, something dangerous. Just as the silence became unbearable, it was ripped apart by a sound that had no place in a mating ceremony. A guttural snarl from the darkness, not from a pack wolf. This was the ragged, desperate sound of a rogue. Suddenly, the forest erupted, shadows detached from the trees moving with a feral speed. Rogues! A dozen of them, maybe more, their fur matted, their eyes burning with a mad, starved light. They poured into the clearing, a wave of desperate violence. Panic exploded. Shouts and screams replaced the stunned silence. The pack warriors, caught completely off guard, scrambled to form a defensive line. The ceremony was over. A bloodbath had just begun. Alara was frozen, the world dissolving into a blur of snapping jaws and terrified howls. Liam was already dragging Clara back toward the Alpha's side, protecting his precious new future. No one was looking at her. No one ever did. A massive rogue, its teeth bared in a rictus of hunger, broke through the line. Its wild eyes locked onto her. The weakest prey, an easy kill. It lunged, a dark shape of claws and death. Alara had no time to scream, no time to even think. This was the end. But it wasn't. A blur of motion, faster than thought, slammed into the rogue. It was the king. Chapter 3. A spark in the ashes. He moved like a phantom, a living shadow of pure, lethal grace. One moment he was standing before her. The next, he was a whirlwind of destruction. The rogue never stood a chance. The king didn't shift. He didn't need to. He met the beast with his bare hands, the sound of snapping bone echoing sickeningly in the chaos. He was brutal, efficient, a force of nature in the shape of a man. He tossed the rogue's broken body aside like a piece of trash and turned back to her before it even hit the ground. His chest was heaving slightly, his black shirt splattered with blood that wasn't his. The battle raged around them, a symphony of snarls, screams, and the clang of claws on. Were those silver daggers? But in the space between them, the world fell away. It was just the two of them, surrounded by a war they weren't a part of. His golden eyes blazed, raw and possessive, pinning her in place. He took a step toward her, his expression unreadable. To steady her, or maybe to claim her, he reached out and wrapped his large, warm hand around her upper arm, and her world exploded. Fire. A bolt of lightning shot up her arm, straight to her core, igniting every nerve ending in its path. It wasn't pain. It was everything. A jolt of pure, primal energy that shook her to the very foundation of her soul. A shockwave of recognition. An impossible truth. In that single searing moment of contact, a wordless conversation passed between them. A thousand lifetimes of longing, of searching, of finally, finally finding. Mine. The word wasn't spoken. It didn't need to be. It was a brand on her soul, a primal claim that resonated so deeply it felt like it had always been there, waiting to be awakened. Deep inside her, the part of her that was Wolf, the part that had been dormant for months, buried under a mountain of grief and shame, stirred. It woke with a furious, triumphant howl, recognizing its other half, its mate. Alara gasped, stumbling back, but his grip was like iron. He held her fast, refusing to let her go. She stared up at him, her heart hammering against her ribs, her mind reeling. Mate? No. It was impossible. It was a cruel joke. The goddess gave each wolf one mate, one perfect match for their soul. Hers was Liam, and Liam had rejected her. He had broken the bond, declared it null because she was flawed. A new bond shouldn't be possible. It defied every law of their existence. What was happening? His eyes burned into hers, a silent, terrifying question in their depths. He looked just as stunned as she felt, his jaw tight, his knuckles white where he gripped her arm. The chaos of the fight faded into a distant roar. The only battle that mattered now was the one raging inside of her, between the cold, hard reality of her rejection and the undeniable, impossible fire of this new connection. Who was this man? This king who looked at her not with pity, but with a fierce, burning possession that terrified and thrilled her in equal measure? The fighting around them was intensifying. She could hear the pack warriors shouting, their disciplined battle cries mixing with the rabid snarls of the rogues. Someone screamed her name, a distant, panicked sound. But the king didn't let go. He pulled her slightly behind him, shielding her with his body as if it were the most natural thing in the world. He was protecting her. A king was protecting a castoff. It made no sense. Nothing made sense anymore. Her old life had been shattered tonight, first by shame, and now by a miracle that felt more like a curse. The touch was a promise and a threat, the beginning of something she couldn't possibly survive. Chapter 4. A King's Decree. The chaos of the battle was fading, replaced by the groans of the injured and the acrid smell of rogue blood. But Alara heard none of it. The only sound was the frantic, thunderous drumming of her own heart. King Kaelin's hand was still wrapped around her arm, a brand of impossible heat against her skin. The connection between them was a living thing, a vibrant, humming cord that pulled at her very soul. It was terrifying. It was madness. She tried to yank her arm away, a pathetic, jerky motion, Let go. The words were a ragged whisper, lost in the charged air between them. He didn't release her. His golden eyes were locked on hers, a turbulent storm of shock, fury, and something else. Something so intensely possessive, it stole the breath from her lungs. It felt as if he were seeing his entire future in her face, and it was a future he would kill to protect. This was because the bond was a two-way street. She could feel the echo of his own disbelief, his own staggering recognition. He was just as caught in this maelstrom as she was. Finally, the pack alpha, a great wolf named Marcus, approached them. His face, normally a mask of calm authority, was pale and strained. He bowed his head low, a gesture of deep respect that was also laced with fear. "Your Majesty, my pack is in your debt. You have saved us from a slaughter." He hesitated, his eyes flicking from the king's unyielding grip to Alara's face. "But this is a pack matter." King Kaelin's gaze didn't waver from Alara. His voice was cold iron. "She was undefended. That makes it my matter." From across the clearing, Liam was staring. His handsome face, the face she had once loved more than life itself, was twisted into an ugly mask of disbelief and rage. How dare she? How dare his broken, rejected thing draw the attention of a king? His fury was a palpable wave, but it felt distant, unimportant, because the king's presence was a mountain that blocked out everything else. At last, Kaelin's grip on her arm loosened, though the phantom heat of his touch remained a permanent mark. He turned to face Alpha Marcus, his immense height and power casting a literal shadow over the pack leader. His voice rang out, clear and absolute, for all to hear. "The immediate threat is handled." He paused, and in that brief silence, his gaze swept the clearing, landing once more on Alara. It was a silent vow, a warning, and a promise, all in one look. Then he addressed the entire pack, his tone leaving no room for argument. "By royal decree," the king announced, his voice a low thunder that vibrated in Alara's bones. "This she-wolf, Alara, is under my personal protection. Any harm that befalls her, any insult whispered against her, will be considered a direct act of aggression against the Lycan crown." A collective gasp swept through the crowd. It wasn't a request. It wasn't a negotiation. It was a declaration of ownership, a political bomb dropped in the heart of their lives. He hadn't just saved her. He had claimed her, wrapping her in his power in front of every single person who had ever called her worthless. Liam looked as if he'd been struck by lightning, his face a thunderous portrait of thwarted pride. Alara felt the ground shift beneath her feet. The world she knew, the quiet, painful life of a ghost, was over. The king had just set it on fire. Chapter 5. A Fate Denied. Following the king's stunning proclamation, the clearing buzzed like a disturbed hornet's nest. The pack wolves gathered in hushed, frantic groups, their eyes darting between their alpha, a furious Liam, and her. Alara felt like an animal in a cage, the focus of 100 bewildered, resentful stares. She wanted the earth to open up and swallow her whole. The king's protection felt less like a shield and more like a spotlight, illuminating every flaw, every crack in her broken soul. She had to get away, had to find a shadow to crawl back into. But he wouldn't let her. As Alpha Marcus tried to restore order, King Kaelin moved toward her, his presence parting the crowd like a ship through water. He cornered her near the edge of the woods, the massive trunks of the oaks at her back leaving her no room for escape. Up close, he was even more intimidating. The scent of him, clean rain, ancient forest, and pure, untamed power, was overwhelming. "You felt it." It was a statement, not a question. His voice, for her ears only now, was a low, intense rumble that vibrated through her. Alara flinched, wrapping her arms around her waist. A lie was her only defense, a desperate, fragile shield against a hope so terrifying it could destroy her. "I don't know what you're talking about," she whispered, staring at the ground. "I felt nothing." A humorless chuckle escaped him. Look at me and say that. Slowly, she forced her gaze upward. His golden eyes were searing, seeing right through her pathetic lie. The truth was a wild thing, thrashing inside her chest. You're mistaken, she choked out, the words tasting like poison. I can't be that. I can't be your mate. My bond. It was with Liam. A bond he broke, Kaelin countered, his voice sharp. A bond he proved himself unworthy of. The Moon Goddess does not make mistakes, little wolf. Fate chose you for me. That word, fate, made something inside her snap. All the pain, all the humiliation, all the lonely nights spent hating her own body, it all came boiling to the surface. Fate, she hissed, her voice trembling with a sudden violent fury. Fate chose to make me barren. Fate chose to have me publicly shamed and thrown away like trash. Your fate is just another cage, another way for me to be pitied and judged. I will not be your charity case. I will not be your broken toy for you to fix. Tears of rage and despair welled in her eyes, and she hated them. She hated this weakness. But even more, she hated the flicker of understanding in his eyes. She didn't want his understanding. She didn't want his pity. It was safer to be hated, because hate was an ending. Pity was a long, slow poison. She had to push him away before he could get close enough to see just how damaged she truly was, because if he saw it and rejected her too, that was a wound she would not survive. His expression, for a brief moment, softened. He saw the raw terror behind her anger, but then his jaw hardened, his kingly resolve returning like a steel mask. He knew she would fight this, and he was prepared for a war. He took a single step back, leaving the intimacy of their private confrontation and reclaiming the center of the clearing. He drew himself up to his full, intimidating height, commanding the attention of every wolf present. His voice boomed, a king's proclamation that echoed off the trees and silenced every whisper. Hear me, Silver Moon, he roared. There is no mistake. Alara is my fated mate, chosen by the goddess herself. I will claim what fate has given me. The declaration was a gauntlet thrown down, a final, irrevocable statement. He hadn't just drawn a line in the sand. He had built a fortress on it and dared the entire world to challenge him. Alara stood frozen, her heart a block of ice in her chest. She felt like she was standing at the edge of the world. And the king, he had just shoved her into the abyss. Chapter 6. Point of No Return. The king's claim hung in the chilled air, thick and suffocating. The pack was stunned into silence, their collective gaze swinging between Alara and their alpha. King Kaelin turned to Marcus, his golden eyes narrowed, his authority absolute. She will gather her things. She leaves for my lands with me at sunrise. It was not a request. It was the statement of a fact that had already been decided. She is no longer your responsibility. Liam finally broke. A raw, guttural snarl ripped from his chest. You can't do this, he raged, stepping forward. She's a Silver Moon wolf. She's nothing, a barren outcast. Silence! The command came not from the king, but from Alpha Marcus, Liam's own father. The Alpha's face was a grim, calculating mask. Alara saw it then, the cold political maneuvering in his eyes. She wasn't a pack member to him anymore. She wasn't even a person. She was a bridge, a living, breathing sacrifice he could use to forge an alliance with the most powerful ruler on the continent. Her worthlessness had suddenly, ironically, made her priceless. She will be ready, Your Majesty, Alpha Marcus said, his voice strained but firm. He had just sold her. He had traded her for political favor, casting her out with the same casual cruelty as his son. A strange, hollow calm washed over Alara. The final thread that tied her to this place, to these people, had just been severed. She had endured their whispers, their pity, their scorn. But this final, absolute betrayal was liberating. There was nothing left here for her to fight for, nothing left to lose. She was already a ghost in this pack. The only difference now was that she would be haunting someone else's lands, This feeling was a dangerous cocktail of terror and freedom. Two she-wolves she had known since birth escorted her to her small cold den at the edge of the territory. They didn't speak to her. They didn't meet her eyes. It was as if she were already dead to them. She packed her few belongings, a spare tunic, a worn leather-bound book of old tales, a small wooden wolf her mother had carved for her years ago. It took less than 5 minutes. When she emerged, the first light of dawn was painting the sky in bruised shades of purple and gray. The king was waiting for her, a tall, silent silhouette against the rising sun. The rest of the pack watched from a distance, their faces a mixture of fear, awe, and resentment. This was her exodus, her exile. Kaelin offered no words of comfort, no false promises. His presence was simply a fact, a large, dangerous, and undeniable fact that was now the center of her universe. He held out his hand to her, a simple gesture, but it was everything. Taking it meant leaving her home, her history, her entire world behind. It meant stepping into a future so uncertain it felt like walking off a cliff in the dark. But staying. Staying meant suffocating in the ashes of her old life. Her heart hammered against her ribs. What choice did she really have? With the eyes of her entire past watching, she took a shaky breath. She lifted her hand and placed it in his. The spark ignited instantly, a familiar jolt of fire and fate, a terrifying and thrilling hum that traveled up her arm and settled deep in her chest. He curled his fingers around hers, his grip strong and sure, a silent promise of protection or a declaration of possession. Maybe both. Together, they turned their backs on the Silver Moon pack. They walked away from the whispers, the judgment, and the life that had almost broken her, heading into the dawn and into the king's world. Chapter 7. The Ashen Court. The journey to the Lycan lands was a silent, bruising affair. They traveled for what felt like days, the landscape shifting around Alara like a dream. The gentle, rolling hills of her homeland gave way to jagged mountains that clawed at the sky, their peaks shrouded in a perpetual mist. The trees here were ancient giants, their branches so thick they blotted out the sun, creating a world of eternal twilight. The very air felt different, heavier, charged with a raw, untamed power that made the wolf inside her pace with a mixture of fear and excitement. This was a land of predators. Kaelin's fortress was not built, but commanded from the rock. It was a brutalist masterpiece of dark, volcanic stone carved directly into the heart of the largest mountain, looking less like a home and more like a great beast lying in wait. Towers pierced the clouds like broken fangs, and the wind that howled through its narrow passages sounded like a mournful cry. This wasn't a castle, it was the citadel, a predator's den, and she was the newest prey. The moment they stepped into the great hall, she felt the eyes. Dozens of them. The lycans of his court were nothing like the wolves of Silvermoon. They were larger, their movements sharper, their eyes holding a feral intelligence that was unsettling. They were warriors, every last one of them, and they stared at her with a chilling, analytical curiosity. The whispers started immediately. They were in a different tongue, a harsher, more guttural language, but she didn't need to understand the words. She understood the tone. She had been hearing it her entire life. They were judging her, assessing her, and they were finding her weak. She heard a word that sounded like Vida, spoken with a sneer from a tall, scarred lycan near the throne. The meaning was as clear as a slap to the face. Empty. Barren. Alara felt herself shrink, the familiar cold of shame seeping into her bones. She had traveled 100 leagues only to find herself in the exact same cage. The only thing different here was the humming connection to the king beside her. It was a constant low-vibration thrum under her skin, a terrifying and strangely grounding presence in this intimidating new world. It was the only thing that kept her from turning and running right back out into the wild. Kaelin must have felt her trembling. He stopped in the center of the massive hall, forcing the entire court into a sudden, expectant silence. He turned to face her, his large hands gripping her shoulders gently, forcing her to look at him. His golden eyes were a blazing fire in the gloom. "Do not listen to them," he commanded, his voice a low growl meant only for her, yet it seemed to echo in the cavernous space. "Their opinions are wind. You are not in Silvermoon anymore." He leaned closer, his intensity a shield against the prying stares. "This is my territory, my law." He looked directly into her eyes, and she felt the raw power of his will. "Here, you are mine," he breathed, the word a possessive brand on the air between them. "No one touches you. No one disrespects you. Do you understand me?" It was a command wrapped in a promise, a threat delivered like a vow. As she stared, mesmerized by his intensity, her gaze drifted past his shoulder. A she-wolf with eyes the color of polished silver and hair like a spill of moonlight watched them. Her beauty was severe, perfect, and cold as a winter stone. And the look on her face, it was pure, undiluted hatred, directed entirely at Alara. Chapter 8. The Spark of a Storm. The chambers he led her to were fit for a queen. Carved from the same dark stone as the fortress, the room was softened by thick furs, a roaring fireplace, and tapestries depicting epic hunts under a silver moon. A massive bed dominated the space, its luxury a stark contrast to the simple cot she'd left behind. But it didn't feel like a home. It felt like a gilded cage. This opulence, this comfort, it felt like payment, another form of pity. The anger that had been simmering just beneath her fear finally began to boil over. She turned on him as soon as the heavy oak door closed, leaving them in a tense, crackling silence. "Why?" she demanded, her voice shaking slightly. She hated how weak it sounded. "Why are you doing this? This room, the proclamation in the hall, all of it. Is this more of your royal charity? Do you enjoy collecting broken things, Your Majesty?" His face, which had been unreadable, darkened into a thunderous mask.
"Do not mistake fate for pity," he growled, his voice dangerously low. "I am not Liam."
The comparison was a lit match to gasoline. "No, you're worse," she shot back, taking a defiant step forward. Adrenaline surged through her, making her reckless. "You're a king. You could have any she-wolf in the world, any strong, whole she-wolf who could give you 100 heirs. So why choose me? Why drag me all the way here to be stared at and judged by your entire court of savages?" Her words struck him like a physical blow. His control, so absolute just moments before, fractured. He stalked toward her, his movements fluid and predatory, backing her up until her shoulders hit the cold, unyielding stone of the wall. The vast room suddenly felt small, suffocating.
"Because fate is not a choice," he snarled, his face inches from hers,
his hot breath ghosting across her skin. The space between them sizzled. "You think I wanted this?" he continued, his voice a raw, furious whisper. "A mate from a weak backwater pack? A she-wolf haunted by shadows and whispers? You have no idea what you have walked into, the dangers you have brought to my door." His anger was a living thing, wild and barely contained. He was right. She didn't understand. How could her presence, her brokenness, be a danger to a man like him? His gaze dropped to her lips, and the anger shifted into something else. Something darker, hotter. The urge to close the final inch between them, to crush his mouth to hers and silence her defiance with a brutal claim, was a tangible force in the room. She could feel the echo of it in her own body, a traitorous pull low in her belly. Her breath hitched. Her lips parted. He leaned in, and then with a guttural curse, he pulled back. He slammed his fist into the stone wall just beside her head. The impact shuddered through her entire body, the sound of it like a crack of thunder. The wall trembled. He stood there for a moment, breathing heavily, his knuckles bleeding against the gray rock, his eyes squeezed shut as if fighting a war within himself. "My king." The voice was like ice water, shattering the tension. They both looked toward the open doorway. The silver-eyed she-wolf stood there,
her posture perfect, her expression a mask of cold disapproval. Her gaze flickered to the crater his fist had made in the wall, then settled on Alara with disdain. "Your beta sends his regards," she said, her voice dripping with ice. "The council requires your presence." She looked Alara up and down, a slow, insulting appraisal. "Try not to break anything else while you're here. We have standards to maintain." Chapter 9. The Strength of the Unseen. Reeling from the explosive confrontation and the she-wolf's venomous glare, Alara felt the walls of the luxurious room closing in. This wasn't a sanctuary. It was a prison of furs and stone. She had to get out. She needed air. Slipping out of the chamber, she wandered the cold, echoing corridors of the citadel, her footsteps the only sound. The fortress was a maze, designed to confuse invaders, and she soon found herself lost, eventually stepping out into a vast, windswept courtyard. Lycan children were training there. They were older than pups, but not yet adults, their movements already filled with a deadly grace her own pack's younglings lacked. They tumbled and sparred with wooden staffs, their laughter sharp and wild in the crisp mountain air. Alara watched from the shadows of a colonnade, a familiar, hollow ache blooming in her chest. A future filled with children's laughter was a door that had been slammed shut in her face. Her attention was drawn to a small boy with a mop of unruly black hair and serious dark eyes. He was smaller than the others, and he struggled to lift a practice shield, his face set with fierce determination. As the other children moved to a different drill, a trainer began stacking the heavy wooden shields against a stone rack. He didn't secure the last one properly. It all happened in a heartbeat. The shield, a thick plank of iron-banded oak, wobbled. The small boy, his back to the rack, took a proud step backward to admire his work with a training dummy, placing himself directly in the shield's path. It tilted. It slid. It began to fall. The trainers were shouting, too far away to intervene. The other children screamed. Time seemed to stretch and slow. There was no time to think, only to act. A primal instinct Alara didn't know she possessed took over. She shot out from the shadows, her body moving with a speed and desperation that surprised even her. She wasn't a warrior. She was an outcast. But the sight of that innocent child in mortal danger erased everything else. She sprinted across the stone courtyard, a blur of motion. She reached him in three long strides, shoving him hard. The boy tumbled out of the way, landing safely on the packed earth with a startled cry. Alara had no time to save herself. She twisted, trying to deflect the blow, and the heavy shield crashed down. Instead of hitting her head, the full, crushing weight of it slammed into her shoulder and back. Pain, white hot and blinding, exploded behind her eyes. The force of the impact threw her to the ground, her head cracking against the stone. Stars burst in her vision as the world went dark for a second. Through the roaring in her ears, her first coherent thought was of the child. Pushing herself up on one arm, she ignored the fire screaming in her shoulder. She saw the little boy staring at her, his dark eyes wide with shock and awe. "Are you all right?" she gasped, her voice strained with pain. The trainers and a crowd of onlookers, including the silver-eyed she-wolf, Serafina, rushed toward them. They expected tears. They expected a weak, broken thing. Serafina's lip was already curled in a sneer. But Alara didn't cry. She gritted her teeth against the waves of agony, her entire focus on the terrified child she had just saved. From a high, carved balcony overlooking the courtyard, King Kaelin had seen everything. He had watched her escape her rooms, had followed her path to the training grounds. He saw the accident, her split-second decision, her selfless, explosive burst of speed. He watched her ignore her own obvious injury to ensure the child was safe. His expression, which had been a mask of cold fury since their argument, slowly changed. The anger receded, replaced by something else entirely. He wasn't watching a damaged outcast from a weak pack anymore. He was watching a she-wolf who had, without a moment's hesitation, thrown herself in front of mortal danger to protect a child that was not her own. He was looking at her, truly looking at her, for the very first time. And what he saw was not weakness, but a strength he had never expected. Chapter 10. The Weight of a Hand King. Kaelin dismissed the Citadel's healers with a single, sharp gesture. He tended to Alara's bruised shoulder himself, his touch surprisingly gentle. His large, calloused fingers, which had so easily snapped a rogue's neck, probed the injury with a careful precision that sent shivers down her spine. This simple act, performed in the quiet of her chambers, was a louder statement than his public decree. It was an act of personal claim, and it did not go unnoticed by the silent guards posted outside her door. The whispers in the Citadel were already changing from scorn to a wary, resentful curiosity. The next day, he led her not to the Great Hall or the library, but to a private training ring high on the Citadel's cliffs. The wind here was sharp and clean, and the sky felt close enough to touch. "My world is not like yours," he said, his voice a low rumble against the sigh of the wind. "Here, there are no bystanders, only predators and prey. You will learn to be neither." Alara's first instinct was to refuse. It felt like another command, another way for him to mold her into something she wasn't. "I'm not a fighter," she said, her voice flat. "You were 2 days ago," he countered, his golden eyes intense. "You fought for that child without a second thought. That instinct is a weapon, but it is raw, unfocused. You will learn to aim it. You will learn to fight for yourself." And so the training began. The first few days were a clumsy, frustrating dance. He was patient, a silent, watchful teacher. He showed her how to shift her weight, how to hold a dagger, how to turn an attacker's momentum against them. When he corrected her stance, he would place his hands on her waist or her shoulders, and the world would tilt on its axis. The bond between them, that constant humming current, would flare into a bonfire. It was no longer just a shocking jolt. It was a slow-burning heat that lived permanently under her skin. The air grew thick with unspoken things. Every accidental brush of his skin against hers was a spark in the dark. Every time he moved behind her to guide her arms through a block, she could feel the solid wall of his chest, smell the scent of pine and cold mountain air that clung to him. It was a dizzying, terrifying intimacy that had nothing to do with words. During a sparring exercise, her foot slipped on the loose gravel. She stumbled forward, a cry escaping her lips. He caught her in an instant, his arms wrapping around her to stop her fall. Her front was flush against his, her hands pressed against the hard muscle of his chest. His arms were a cage of steel and warmth around her. She looked up, and the world narrowed to the space of a single breath. His golden eyes, stripped of all their kingly authority, were blazing with a raw, unguarded hunger. The anger she had seen in her chambers was gone, replaced by a devastating want that mirrored the traitorous ache in her own belly. He didn't pull away. Time seemed to stop, suspended in the space between their heartbeats. Slowly, as if he were fighting a war against himself, he lifted a hand. His thumb brushed against the curve of her cheek, a featherlight, impossibly gentle touch that shattered her defenses. Her breath hitched, her lips parted. He started to lean in. "Your Majesty." The voice, grim and heavy, broke the spell. They sprang apart as if burned. Kaelin's Beta, an older, formidable lycan with a face like a granite cliff, stood at the entrance to the ring. His eyes were carefully fixed on the king, pretending not to have seen the charged moment. "A messenger has arrived from the Silver Moon Pack," the Beta said, his voice tight. "He claims the matter is urgent." The outside world had just come crashing back in, bringing with it the cold, bitter ghosts of her past. Chapter 11, The Poison in the Blood. Kaelin was forced to leave, his expression a mask of cold fury at the interruption. Alara was left with the ghost of his touch on her cheek and a heart that wouldn't stop pounding. As she was being escorted back to her rooms, a strange, deep ache pulsed in her core. It was a familiar coldness she had lived with for years, a cold that had nothing to do with her bruised shoulder or the mountain air. She mentioned it in passing to one of her guards, who, under the king's strict orders, immediately summoned the Citadel's head healer. The healer was an ancient she-wolf named Morwen, so old her eyes were clouded with the white mist of blindness. She was led into the chamber by a young attendant, her gnarled fingers gripping a staff of twisted ironwood. She did not smell of herbs and poultices, but of old stone, deep earth, and something else. Magic. Morwen dismissed the attendant and the guards. In the silence, she moved toward Alara, her sightless eyes seeming to look right through her. She didn't ask about symptoms. She didn't touch her. Instead, she lifted her wrinkled hands and held them hovering over Alara's abdomen. A faint silver light pulsed from her palms and the air grew cold. Her brow furrowed, a deep line in her ancient face. This, Morwen's voice was like the rustle of dry leaves. This is not the work of the goddess. Alara's blood ran cold. What do you mean? The life force here, it is not absent. It is caged, the old wolf rasped. Your womb is not dormant, child. It is bound by a sigil of twisted magic. It is a blood curse, woven into your very being to mimic barrenness. It has been feeding on your strength for years, a slow and patient poison. The world tilted. A curse. All this time. A lifetime of shame, of being called damaged, of believing she was fundamentally broken. It was a lie. Someone had done this to her. It wasn't a failing of her body. It wasn't the goddess's will. It was a betrayal. A cold, calculated act of cruelty. Who would do something so monstrous? The Silver Moon healer who had given her the diagnosis? Liam, so he would have an excuse to cast her aside? His new mate, Clara, to eliminate a rival? The faces of her past flashed through her mind, a gallery of potential traitors. Can it be broken? Alara asked, her voice a desperate whisper. Morwen lowered her hands. Curses of this nature are tied to the spirit. They resist common magic. They can only be shattered by a force of equal and opposite power. The old wolf's sightless eyes seemed to find hers. The claiming bite of a true mate, his mark upon your soul, and his blood, freely given in a ritual under the light of the full moon. Only the life force of your other half can burn the poison from your own. The solution was Kaelin. The only path to becoming whole was to fully embrace the one thing she had been fighting with every fiber of her being. She wasn't broken. She had been poisoned. And her king held the only antidote. As this staggering realization settled in her soul, a deep, resonant bell began to toll throughout the Citadel. It was not a call to dinner or a change of the guard. It was a deep, urgent clang that vibrated through the stone floors, an alarm that signaled an imminent, deadly threat from outside the walls. Chapter 12. A Conspiracy of Alphas. The alarm sent the Citadel into a state of controlled chaos. Heavy stone doors slammed shut, and the corridors filled with the sound of running feet and the clatter of armor. Kaelin's personal guard materialized in Alara's chambers, their faces grim, and ordered her to stay away from the windows. She was a prisoner again, but this time, for her own protection. Minutes later, the door burst open and Kaelin swept in, bringing the scent of ozone and violence with him. The mask of the king was firmly back in place. The attack on the northern border was a diversion, he said, his voice clipped and hard. They're not trying to invade. They were trying to draw my forces away from the Citadel. They? Alara asked, her heart pounding. Who are they? His golden eyes were dark with a terrible fury. Your former Alpha, Marcus. The name felt like a slap. He has made an alliance with the Vargr Pack, a clan of mountain wolves who have challenged my family for generations. He began to pace the room, a caged lion radiating barely contained violence. The Silver Moon Messenger was a plant. He let a name slip under interrogation. Vorlag. Kaelin stopped and looked at her, and the pieces began to click into a horrifying picture in her mind. Alpha Vorlag of the Vargr wants to destabilize my reign. And Marcus? Marcus has offered him the key to doing it. You. Alara felt the blood drain from her face. Me? But why? Because of the curse, Kaelin growled, and she knew then that Morwen must have told him. If the truth of your condition is revealed, it exposes the Silvermoon Pack's treachery. It invalidates Liam's mating to Clara and makes his claim to the Alpha position worthless. Marcus needs you dead to bury that secret forever. He gestured angrily. And Vorlag? He needs you dead because a true mate solidifies my power. An heir would end his challenge to my throne permanently. You, Alara, are the one thing that can secure my future or shatter it. She wasn't just a rejected she-wolf anymore. She was a political linchpin. A living, breathing secret that two alphas were willing to start a war to destroy. Her life had become the prize in a deadly game of power. The stakes were no longer just about her heart. They were about her survival, the fate of a kingdom, and the truth of a devastating betrayal. Just then, his beta burst into the room, his armor hastily buckled. My king, there's been a breach in the West Wing. It's an assassination attempt. They're trying to reach the throne room. Kaelin's head snapped toward the door, his instincts as a ruler taking over. But as he turned to leave, Alara's eyes were drawn to the balcony. A flicker of movement in the deep shadows. A shape detaching itself from the stone gargoyles. The assassins weren't in the West Wing. That was just another diversion. They were here. For her. Before she could scream a warning, a dark-robed figure slipped over the railing of her balcony, landing silently on the stone floor. A silver dagger, its blade gleaming like a sliver of deadly moonlight, was clutched in its hand. Chapter 13. The fire within the world narrowed to the glint of silver and the scent of death. Before the assassin could take a second step, Kaelin moved. He was a dark blur, a force of pure, kinetic violence that crashed into the attacker, sending them both tumbling over a heavy oak table. Wood splintered. A second figure, just as cloaked and silent, vaulted over the balcony railing. They were surrounded. The beta and the guards were on the other side of the citadel, chasing a ghost. They were alone. Panic seized Alara for a heartbeat, cold and paralyzing. But then she saw the second assassin raise a crossbow, aiming it at the struggling form of the king. The training, the instinct, the memory of protecting that child. It all came rushing back. She was not a bystander. Not anymore. She ripped the heavy iron poker from the fireplace, its weight solid and real in her hands. As the assassin fired, she swung the poker with all her might. The heavy iron bar connected with the crossbow, sending the bolt whizzing harmlessly into the ceiling. The attacker snarled, surprised, and turned on her. But the single moment of distraction was all Kaelin needed. He dispatched his opponent with a brutal final twist and was on his feet, his golden eyes blazing with a king's fury. Together, in a chaotic, desperate dance of survival, they fought. She was not a warrior, but she was fast, using the poker to block and feint, creating openings that Kaelin exploited with lethal precision. When it was over, two broken bodies lay silent on the fine rugs. The chamber was a wreck. Adrenaline sang in Alara's veins, sharp and electric. She and Kaelin stood in the center of the destruction, breathing heavily, their bodies covered in dust and sweat. The immediate threat was gone, but the aftermath left something else in its place. The near-death experience had burned away all their arguments, all their uncertainty, all their fear. All that remained was a raw, undeniable truth. He stalked toward her, his eyes devouring her. He cupped her face in his large, warm hands, his thumbs gently stroking the smudges of soot on her cheeks. You, he breathed, his voice rough with an emotion she couldn't name. You fought. You told me to, she whispered, her voice trembling. The bond between them was no longer a gentle hum or a simmering heat. It was a roaring, uncontrollable inferno. The fear of what he might think of her, of her past, of her brokenness. It all seemed so foolish now. Life was too short, too fragile to be ruled by fear. He looked at her not as a problem to be solved, but as his partner, his equal who had just stood with him against death itself. And then he kissed her. It wasn't a gentle exploration. It was a desperate, claiming crash of lips and teeth and soul. It was the culmination of every stolen glance, every forbidden touch, every silent battle they had fought within themselves. It tasted of relief and terror, and a desperate, primal need. She kissed him back with a fire that matched his own, her hands tangling in his dark hair, pulling him closer. This was not about fate. This was a choice, a fierce, soul-deep choice to claim the one thing that made her feel whole. He swept her into his arms, his mouth never leaving hers, and carried her through the wreckage to the massive bed. Their coming together was a storm, a passionate, emotional collision that was as much about survival as it was about desire. For the first time, she felt no shame in her own body. With him, she was not damaged. She was desired. She was cherished. He claimed her, again and again, a physical and spiritual acceptance of the bond that tied them together. But he did not bite her. He did not leave his mark. The world outside was still too dangerous, the future too uncertain. Later, as they lay tangled in the furs, their breathing slowing in the quiet aftermath of the storm, Alara's eyes drifted to the balcony. The doors were still open to the cold night air. For a split second, she saw it. A shadow detaching itself from a distant parapet. A figure that had been standing there, watching. And then it was gone. Chapter 14. An Unholy Alliance. The next dawn broke over a citadel that had transformed. The air of quiet intimidation was gone, replaced by the grim energy of a fortress preparing for war. The captured assassin, under Morwen's magically enhanced interrogation, had revealed everything. Alara stood beside Kaelin in the center of the council chamber, the eyes of every lord and warrior upon her. She did not flinch. After last night, her fear felt like a distant country she had once visited. Kaelin's beta, the grim, granite-faced lycan named Rorik, laid out the chilling truth. Alpha Marcus of Silvermoon did not simply suggest an alliance with Vorlag, Rorik reported, his voice echoing in the stone chamber. He sealed it in blood, and the emissary who brokered this treachery was his own son, Liam. The name hit Alara with the force of a physical blow. Liam. It wasn't enough that he had cast her aside. It wasn't enough that he had named her damaged. He had personally arranged her murder. The last vestiges of her old pain, the lingering sorrow for the love she thought she'd lost, were burned away in a flash of cold, clean fury. What was left was not a desire for revenge. It was a hunger for justice. The council lords began to murmur, their expressions uneasy. It was then that Serafina, Rorik's silver-eyed daughter, spoke up. Her voice was sharp as frosted glass. Our king's judgment seems clouded, she said, her gaze sliding over Alara with contempt. This outsider has brought nothing but a war with the Vargr to our doorstep. Perhaps the Silvermoon wolves have a point. She is a liability, not a strength. Her words were a poison dart, aimed at the heart of Kaelin's authority, planting seeds of doubt among his council. Before Kaelin could unleash his fury, the air in the center of the chamber began to shimmer, like heat off a summer road. It twisted and coalesced, forming a hazy, spectral image. It was dark magic, a Vargr shaman sending. The image sharpened into a scene, the hulking, scarred figure of Alpha Vorlag, his face a mask of brutal ambition. And standing beside him, looking smug and confident, was Liam. The apparition of her former mate looked across the impossible distance and met Alara's eyes. A cruel, mocking smile twisted his lips. His voice, laced with a magical echo, filled the chamber. Did you truly believe you could escape what you are, Alara? He sneered. A king can drape a broken doll in silks, but it is a broken doll all the same. His spectral gaze was filled with a possessive hatred. Enjoy your borrowed time. You will never bear his heir. The vision dissolved, leaving a stunned, chilling silence in its wake. Liam's words were not just a taunt. they were a confirmation. He knew about the curse. He knew her deepest wound, the one he himself had inflicted, and he was using it as a weapon in a war he had helped to start. The question hung in the air, terrifying and unspoken. How much more did he know? Chapter 15, The Strength of the Bond. The council chamber erupted into chaos. Kaelin's rage was a palpable force, a promise of the bloody war to come. Serafina and her faction of dissenters were whispering furiously, their challenge to his rule now hanging openly in the air. Alara, though shaken by Liam's magical intrusion, felt a strange new resolve hardening inside her. She would not be a pawn in their games. Later, she found Kaelin in the Royal Forge, the rhythmic clang of a smith's hammer a counterpoint to the tension in the air. He was pulling on his black leather armor, preparing to lead a retaliatory strike himself. His beta, Rorik, stood beside him, pointing at a map and advising a strategy. Alara, feeling a sudden need to offer some small comfort, some moment of peace before the storm, poured a goblet of cool water and brought it to him. As she neared, a sudden blinding pain exploded in her own chest. It was a sharp, stabbing agony, so intense and so real that she cried out, dropping the silver goblet with a clatter. It felt as if a blade had just been plunged deep into her own heart. But it wasn't her pain. Through the searing, undeniable power of the mate bond, she felt his agony. It was Kaelin's. Her head snapped up. She saw Rorik, the loyal beta, his face no longer stoic, but a mask of cold, murderous intent. In his hand was a small, wicked-looking dagger, its tip glowing faintly with a purple, viscous poison. He hadn't been advising his king. He had been waiting for the perfect moment to strike. He was a traitor. No! Alara's scream was a raw, primal sound. She didn't think. She launched herself forward, a desperate, flying tackle. She crashed into Kaelin, her smaller body knocking the powerful king off balance just as Rorik lunged. The poisoned blade, which had been aimed directly at Kaelin's unsuspecting heart, was deflected. It sliced across the king's ribs, a deep and serious wound, but not the instantly fatal blow the traitor had intended. Rorik, his betrayal laid bare, snarled and turned on Alara. "You should have stayed broken!" he roared, raising the dagger to strike her down. But before his arm could descend, Kaelin, wounded but incandescent with a king's fury, lashed out. His armored backhand caught the beta across the face, sending the traitor flying through the air to crash into the forge's glowing coals. The royal guard, alerted by the commotion, stormed into the forge, their swords drawn. The coup had failed. Rorik was seized, his body smoking, and his face a ruin. His daughter, Serafina, was captured in the corridor moments later, her beautiful face a mask of ice-cold, defeated rage. The internal rot had been exposed and cut out, and it was all because of Alara. Healers rushed to Kaelin's side, their faces pale with panic at the sight of the poison already darkening his veins. But Kaelin ignored them. He reached out and gripped Alara's hand, his hold surprisingly strong. His body was racked with pain, but his golden eyes were perfectly clear, filled with a look of fierce pride and staggering awe. "The bond," he rasped, his voice tight with pain and wonder. "It warned you. I felt nothing. But you felt it for me." Their connection was more than just desire, more than just fate. It was a weapon. It was a shield. The traitors inside the citadel had been defeated, but Vorlag and Liam were still out there, their plans now in ruins. They would be more desperate, more dangerous than ever. The war had truly begun, and Alara was no longer a victim caught in the currents. She was the heart of the storm. Chapter 16. The ghost of Silver Moon Weeks bled into one another, each day marked by the slow, steady healing of the king. The poison had been purged, but it left a shadow on his strength, a vulnerability he concealed behind a mask of cold fury. In those quiet, tense weeks, the Citadel became a war camp, and Alara became his shadow. She was no longer a frightened refugee. She was his confidant, his counsel, the only one who could soothe the restless storm in his soul. In the stillness of the night, their bond deepened, a silent language of shared glances and gentle touches. For the first time since she was a pup, she felt purposeful, strong, which made the fall so much harder. The trap was sprung with a devastating elegance. Under the false flag of a diplomatic parley, Alpha Vorlag lured Kaelin into a strategic meeting. While the king was occupied, the Vargr shamans worked their dark magic, finding a flaw in the citadel's ancient wards. Alara was walking in a high, secluded garden, the one place she felt at peace, when the attack came. It wasn't a frontal assault. It was a silent ambush. Figures in dark leather dropped from the walls. A silver net, the ultimate poison to a wolf's skin, was thrown over her, and a sweet, cloying gas filled her lungs. Her connection to Kaelin, that warm, vibrant tether, went silent. And then, there was only darkness. She awoke on the cold, damp stone of a dungeon floor. The air stank of mildew, fear, and despair. Alpha Vorlag stood over her, a hulking mountain of scarred muscle and cruel ambition. His smile was a predator's leer.
"Welcome, little prize," he grunted.
But he was not her jailer. He gestured to the shadows, and another figure stepped forward, the flickering torchlight illuminating a face she knew better than her own. Liam. He was different. The smug confidence was gone, replaced by a hollow-eyed bitterness. Failure and jealousy had carved new, ugly lines into his handsome face. "Vorlag has given me the honor of watching you," he said, his voice a venomous rasp. His torment was not of the body, but of the soul. He spent hours in her cell, his whispers a relentless assault on her newfound strength, each word a carefully chosen dagger aimed at an old wound. "Look at you," he'd murmur, circling her like a vulture. "The great king's mate, right back in a cage where you belong. So much for your grand escape." He would sit and watch her, his eyes filled with a possessive hatred. "Did you honestly believe he wanted you? For you? He wants to break the curse so you can be useful, Alara. He wants an heir to secure his throne. The moment he has a pup growing in your belly, he'll see the same damaged thing I did, and he'll toss you aside." The words were poison, seeping into the cracks of her soul. Without the constant, reassuring hum of her bond with Kaelin, she felt utterly alone. The old feelings, the ones she thought she'd conquered, began to creep back in. The shame, the cold, certain belief that she was fundamentally worthless. "You're still broken, Alara," he whispered, his voice dropping low, his face close to the bars of her cell. "He can dress you in silks and call you his queen, but deep down, where it matters, you're still the same damaged goods." Vorlag appeared at the cell door, his shadow falling over both of them. His smile was wide and cruel. "The king is coming for you," he rumbled, his voice filled with a terrible glee.
"He is walking right into our valley, and we have a grand welcome prepared for him. He will have to choose, little wolf, you, or his entire kingdom."
All right, chapter 17, A Crown or a Mate. They dragged her from the dungeon, her arms chained in silver that burned her skin, up countless winding stairs to the highest battlement of Vorlag's fortress. The wind was a mournful howl, whipping her thin tunic against her body. Below, nestled in a narrow rocky valley, was Kaelin's army. They were a sea of dark fur and gleaming steel, but she could see at a glance that they were horribly outnumbered, their position a tactical nightmare. But that wasn't the true trap. The air around the fortress shimmered with a sickly purple energy. It was a barrier, a dome of dark magic that pulsed with an unstable power. Ilara could feel its wrongness deep in her bones. Vorlag grabbed her by the hair, forcing her to her knees at the edge of the battlement. He held a wickedly sharp silver knife to her throat. "King Kaelin!" Vorlag's voice, amplified by magic, boomed across the valley. "Behold your weakness! Your precious mate!" Liam stood beside him, his face a mask of smug satisfaction. Vorlag's voice dropped to a conspiratorial roar.
My shamans have built you a cage, just as I have built one for her. This barrier is tied to a powerful and volatile artifact. Attack my fortress to save her, and the barrier will collapse. It will unleash a wave of pure destructive energy that will boil the very rock in this valley. Your entire army will be turned to ash. He laughed, a terrible, grinding sound. Retreat to save your people, and she dies by my hand. Your mate, or your crown, king. Choose. By some cruel trick of the same magic, Alara could see Kaelin's face as clearly as if he stood before her. She saw the warring emotions, the sheer, gut-wrenching agony of the choice he faced. His duty as a king, his sacred oath to protect his people, was at war with the primal, soul-deep need to protect his mate. He was a god among wolves, a being of immense power and absolute authority, and for the first time, she saw him look utterly lost. And her heart, the one she thought had been healed, shattered into a million pieces. This was her fault, all of it. Her existence had become the weapon that would destroy him. If he chose her, he would be a failed king, a selfish monster who sacrificed thousands for one woman. He would be hated. His reign would be over. If he chose his army, he would lose the other half of his soul, a pain she couldn't even begin to imagine. Serafina had been right all along. She was a liability, a weakness, a curse upon the man she loved. Liam's words echoed in her ears, a venomous chorus. He'll toss you aside, damaged goods. Across the impossible distance, the faint, struggling thread of their bond flared. She felt the crushing weight of his pain, the horror of his impossible choice, and it was more than she could bear. And in that moment, feeling his agony as her own, she made a decision. She would not be the anchor that dragged him to the bottom of the sea. Chapter 18, The Unwanted. The standoff stretched into an eternity. Kaelin sat upon his warhorse, a frozen statue of a king, unable to give the order to advance or retreat. His army waited in a tense, terrible silence. Forlag and Liam savored the moment, their faces alight with the joy of a perfectly executed checkmate. They were not just defeating a king, they were breaking him. Alara knew what she had to do. It was the only merciful path left to her. She closed her eyes, shutting out the wind and the jeering faces of her captors. She focused inward, searching for the faint, flickering ember of her bond with Kaelin. She found it, a weak and desperate pulse in the suffocating darkness of her despair. She gathered every ounce of her will, every shred of her love for him, and pushed it all down that fragile thread. It was not a cry for help. It was a final, desperate command. Let me go, Kaelin. The thought was a silent scream across their bond. Please, let me go. Your people need their king. I am not worth it. I am not worth a single one of their lives. Her own internal voice was a chorus of self-hatred. I was a fool to ever think I could be a queen. I am a plague. I bring nothing but ruin and death. Liam was right. He was always right. Damaged, broken, unwanted. The old lies she had fought so hard to overcome consumed her, because in this moment, they felt like the absolute truth. She had brought this war. She was the cause of all this pain. To free him, she had to make him believe it. She had to sever the very thing that tied him to her. She opened her eyes, looked at his spectral image across the valley, and screamed, her voice a raw, broken thing torn from the depths of her soul. Let me go! I am not your mate! I reject this bond! The lie was the most painful thing she had ever uttered. The words were a blade she plunged into her own heart, and she felt the spiritual backlash immediately. The beautiful, vibrant cord that connected their souls frayed violently. It began to snap, thread by agonizing thread, under the impossible weight of her rejection. Across the valley, Kaelin physically recoiled on his horse as if he'd been shot. The anguish that flooded his face was more profound than any physical wound. He was losing her. Not to Vorlag's knife, but to the despair she had chosen over him. He was watching her willingly crawl back into the cage her abusers had built for her, and he was powerless to stop it. Liam, seeing her utter defeat, leaned close to her ear.
his lips brushing her skin. His voice was a triumphant, venomous whisper meant only for her. "See, I told you," he hissed, his words the final killing blow. "In the end, no one will ever want you." That was it. That was the confirmation of her deepest, darkest fear. It was the truth of her existence. The fight went out of her completely. She slumped in Vorlag's grip, a broken doll, just as Liam had called her. Tears streamed down her face, but she made no sound. She closed her eyes, offered up her soul to the coming darkness, and waited for the end. All was lost. Chapter 19. The Unbroken. This was the end. The cold, sharp edge of Vorlag's knife rested against her throat, a final, chilling promise. Liam's triumphant whisper echoed in the hollow space where her soul used to be. "No one will ever want you." She had accepted it. She had rejected her king, her bond, her last chance at life, all to set him free. She waited for the blade to bite, but it didn't. Across the valley, Kaelin did not retreat. He did not order an attack. He did something that made no sense, something so utterly insane it was an act of pure, desperate faith. He swung his leg over his warhorse, dropping to the ground, unarmed, alone. He took a single, deliberate step forward into the kill zone, a king making himself a target for 1,000 archers, a willing sacrifice. His golden eyes were fixed on hers, a blazing, desperate plea that defied her rejection. He was refusing to let her go. Why? The question was a tiny flicker of light in her all-consuming darkness. Why would he do this? Liam's words replayed in her mind, a venomous, looping curse. "No one will ever want you." But Kaelin's action was a direct, screaming contradiction to that lie. And suddenly, Morwen's words came back to her, clear as a ringing bell. "The curse is tied to the spirit." It was a thunderclap in her soul. A revelation so profound it shook her to her very foundations. The curse wasn't just in her blood. That was only the anchor. Its true power, its real poison, was in her mind. It was designed to make her feel worthless, to break her spirit, to feed on her despair and convince her she was unwanted. Liam's rejection hadn't been a consequence of the curse. It had been the final key that turned the lock, empowering the dark magic by making her believe its central lie. Her shame, her feeling of being damaged, that was the fuel. Her rejection of the bond, her surrender to this despair. That was the curse's ultimate victory. They hadn't broken her. They had only convinced her she was already broken. Her worth was never in her womb. It was never in Liam's acceptance or Kaelin's love. It was hers. It had always been hers. It was the strength that had made her stand up to her tormentors at the ceremony. It was the instinct that had made her shield a child she didn't know. It was the love that was, even now, willing to die to save the man who had shown her she was worthy of it. A new strength, cold and sharp as forged steel, flooded her veins. The fraying thread of her bond with Kaelin, which had been stretched to a breaking point, suddenly stabilized. She focused on it, no longer pushing away, but seizing it. She sent a new message down that connection, not of despair, but of a pure, incandescent rage. "You are wrong, Liam." She opened her eyes. The tears were gone, replaced by a fire that burned with an icy resolve. She looked at Vorlag's snarling face, at Liam's shocked expression, and then across the valley at the king who was willing to die for her. She made a silent vow, a promise to the broken girl she was leaving behind forever. "I will never be unwanted again, because I want myself." The shift was instantaneous. She was no longer a trembling victim. Her spine straightened, her chin lifted. Vorlag felt the change, his grip tightening on her arm. She was no longer his pawn. She had just become the most dangerous person in the valley. Chapter 20. Echo of the Soul. The change in her was a palpable force, a shift in the very air around the battlements. Liam took an involuntary step back, his smug expression replaced by confusion and a flicker of fear. He was looking at the same she-wolf, But the spirit behind her eyes was a stranger, a queen, not a victim. Ilara was no longer waiting to be rescued. She focused inward again, not on the dying embers of her despair, but on the blazing heart of the bond. It was a connection of souls, a two-way conduit. If she had felt his pain in the forge, then he would feel her strength now. She gathered all her newfound will, all her righteous fury, and she pulled. It was not a plea. It was not a request. It was a summons, a demand for her other half to meet her in the coming storm. Across the valley, Kaelin felt it. Not as a whisper, but as a roaring wave of pure power that slammed into his soul. It was her fury, her resolve, her love, reforged into a weapon. It was the beacon he had been praying for, the answer to Vorlog's impossible choice. He understood then that the trap was never about military strategy. It was about breaking Ilara's spirit, and she had just won. The surge of pure, defiant energy that shot through the bond had an unintended consequence. It resonated with the unstable Vargr magic fueling the barrier. A low, discordant hum began to emanate from the standing stones that lined the valley, the air growing thick and heavy. In the heart of the fortress, Vorlog's shamans cried out as they lost control of their own dark creation. Vorlog was distracted, his head snapping toward the source of the hum. That single moment was all Ilara needed. With a guttural cry, she stomped down, grinding her heel onto the arch of Vorlog's foot. As the giant lichen roared in pain, she drove her head backward, smashing the bridge of Liam's nose with the back of her skull. There was a sickening crunch. The silver chains on her wrists burned like fire, but her will was hotter. She twisted, ripping herself free from Vorlag's loosened grip. Now! Kaelin's roar was the signal. His army didn't charge the fortress. They charged the standing stones. Swords and claws ripped into the unprepared Vargr shamans, shattering the ritual. As the purple barrier flickered and died, Kaelin shifted. He exploded into his true form, a terrifying, magnificent beast of midnight fur and blazing golden eyes, larger than any three wolves. He was a force of nature unleashed. He didn't run up the mountain path. He devoured it, his massive claws finding purchase on the sheer rock face. Ilara, meanwhile, fought her way down, a whirlwind of desperate, focused violence. She met him halfway up the slope, a storm of black fur and unholy power colliding with a she-wolf who had just discovered her own fire. He shifted back in a heartbeat, his hands finding her, his eyes searching hers, finding not a victim to be saved, but his equal. "I'm here," was all he said. "I know," she breathed. They stood united, back to back, as Vorlog's enraged warriors swarmed them from above and below. The battle for the fortress had begun. The final war was here. Chapter 21, The Luna's Mark. The battle for the fortress was a maelstrom of steel and fury. Kaelin and Ilara were the eye of the storm, a seamless, lethal whirlwind of coordinated power. He was the unstoppable force, she was the unforeseen variable, her movements quick and precise, her presence protecting his flank. They fought their way through the outer defenses and into the fortress itself, a united front that his warriors followed with awestruck, roaring devotion. They found a moment's respite in a secluded alcove as their forces flooded the main courtyard, the final confrontation with Vorlog and Liam now inevitable. Kaelin was still breathing heavily, the lingering effects of the Vargr poison a subtle weakness his rage could not entirely conceal. He was about to charge toward the throne room to end this once and for all. "Wait!" Ilara's voice, calm and clear amid the clamor of battle, stopped him cold. He turned, his golden eyes questioning, his body thrumming with the need for violence. "Morwen told me the curse could only be broken by a claiming bite and your blood," she said, her gaze steady and fearless. "But she also said it was a curse of the spirit, and could only be undone by a force of equal and opposite power." He watched her, confused, as she stepped closer, her hand rising to cup his jaw. "It was never about you claiming me, Kaelin. It was never about a master and his mate. It was about us. Before he could process her words, she stood on her toes, pulled his head down to hers, and sank her own teeth into the side of his neck, right over the pulsing artery where a king would mark his queen. A claiming bite, from her to him. A shockwave of pure, untamed energy exploded from the point of contact, a visible ripple of silver light. It was an act unheard of, a defiance of 1,000 years of tradition, a she-wolf marking the male. It was not an act of dominance. It was a declaration of absolute equality, of a power not given, but shared. She was not his consort. She was his other half. The bond between them, which had been a powerful connection, solidified into a blazing, incandescent conduit. Power flooded from her into him, a wave of pure life force and defiant love that burned away the last dregs of the Vargr poison. At the same time, his strength poured into her, not to complete her, but to amplify what was already there. She felt radiant, powerful, whole. The ancient curse deep within her blood shrieked, a silent psychic scream against this onslaught of balanced, unified power. It was not broken, not yet. But it was cornered, weakened, its hold on her shattered. Kaelin let out a roar that shook the very stones of the fortress. It was not a sound of pain or anger, but of pure, staggering awe. His warriors in the courtyard heard it, and they saw the silver light. A wave of reverence washed through them, silencing their battle cries for a moment. She was not just the king's mate. She was the Luna. Their Luna. A wolf who did not follow, but who stood beside. At that moment, the great doors to the throne room were thrown open. Vorlog stood there, his massive axe in hand, with a bleeding, snarling Liam at his side. They had prepared for a final showdown with a weakened king and his rescued prize. But they were not facing a king and his mate. They were facing two blazing, unified halves of a single, terrifying soul. Chapter 22. A Debt of Blood. The throne room was a cavern of ringing steel and snarled oaths. Vorlog, a mountain of fury, met Kaelin with the force of an avalanche. Their battle was a clash of titans, the floor shaking with the impact of their blows, the air crackling with their raw power. The sheer force of their fight threw everyone else back, leaving a circle of violent clarity in the center of the room. In that circle, Alara was left to face her ghost. Liam, his face a ruin of blood and shattered pride from her earlier blow, circled her. The knife in his hand was the only steady thing about him. "I made you!" he screamed, his voice cracking with a hysterical rage. "You were nothing, a pathetic barren she-wolf that I had the decency to discard. Everything you are now, you owe to me." He lunged, not with a warrior's skill, but with the wild, desperate fury of a man who had lost everything. Alara's body moved before her mind could think, the long hours of training with Kaelin now a part of her very bones. She parried his clumsy strike, sidestepped his charge, her movements calm and precise. She was not fighting a memory anymore. She was fighting a bitter, pathetic man. He was stronger, though, and his rage gave him a punishing force. He managed to knock the dagger from her hand, the blade skittering across the stone floor. He slammed her back against a great stone pillar, his body pinning hers, the cold point of his own knife pressing against her throat. It was a perfect echo of her capture, a reflection of her lowest moment. "See," he hissed, his breath hot and foul against her cheek. "It always ends like this for you. Weak, helpless, still mine to break." But as she looked into his eyes, she felt no fear. There was no despair. There was only a vast, empty pity. He was the one who was truly broken. His entire identity was built on her perceived weakness, and he couldn't comprehend that she had left that weakness behind. "You're wrong," she whispered, her voice so calm it seemed to unnerve him. Using a reversal Kaelin had drilled into her 100 times, she drove her knee into his thigh, forcing his weight to shift. In that split second of imbalance, she broke his hold, twisted under his arm, and snatched the dagger from his hand. She sprang back, the blade now held steady in her own grip. He stared at her, his mouth agape, unable to process what had just happened. "You never broke me, Liam," she said, her voice as cold and clear as a winter morning. "You only showed me the bars of the cage you and my pack had built for me." She took a step toward him as he stumbled backward. "And you gave me the rage I needed to tear it all down. The dark magic of the curse, the poison that had lived in her blood for years, flared with a sudden, desperate energy. It was tied to him, to his life force. He hadn't cast the spell, but his cruelty, his rejection, had been the final ingredient that gave it its power over her spirit. To kill the curse, she had to sever its anchor. It was a debt of blood, and it was time to collect." He saw the realization in her eyes and turned to run. But she was faster. She moved like a striking viper, driving the dagger deep into his back, right between his shoulder blades. He gasped a wet, rattling sound and fell to his knees. He turned to look at her, his eyes wide with a final, uncomprehending shock. As he collapsed to the stone floor, the curse inside her died with him. It was not a gentle release. It was a violent, shattering explosion of dark energy that ripped out of her with a silent scream. A wave of pure, clean, vibrant life washed through her in its place. The cold spot in her soul, the one she had carried for so long, was gone. She was free. At that exact moment across the room, Kaelin saw his mate's victory. With a final, triumphant roar, he brought his great sword down, ending Alpha Vorlag's reign of terror forever. Chapter 23. The Scars of Victory. The throne room fell silent. The sounds of the battle outside faded to a distant murmur. All that remained was the harsh sound of their own breathing and the sight of their fallen enemies. The air was thick with the coppery scent of blood and the fine gray dust of settled ash. Victory. It felt heavy. It felt quiet. Kaelin, ignoring the deep gash on his own arm, crossed the room in three long strides. He didn't look at Vorlag's body. His eyes, blazing with a fierce and gentle light, were only for her. He reached her where she stood over Liam's still form, and gently, he took her hand, pulling her away from the ghost she had finally laid to rest. He led her to the steps of the throne, away from the carnage, and sat her down. The adrenaline that had sustained her began to ebb, leaving behind a profound exhaustion that settled deep in her bones. Her body ached. Her spirit felt empty. But it was a clean, peaceful emptiness. The space where the curse had lived, where the shame and fear had festered for so long, was now just her. Quiet. Waiting. Kaelin knelt before her, tearing a strip of velvet from a fallen banner to gently clean a shallow cut on her cheek. His touch was incredibly tender, a stark contrast to the violence of the last hour. "Are you all right?" His voice was rough with emotion, stripped of all its kingly command. Alara looked at her hands, then up at his beloved face. A slow, wondering smile touched her lips. "I'm whole," she whispered, the word feeling new and strange and wonderful on her tongue. He reached up, his fingers gently tracing the faint, silvery mark she had left on his neck. A mark of equals, a queen's claim. "You saved me in the forge," he said, his voice thick with wonder. "You saved my army in the valley, and just now, you saved yourself." His golden eyes were filled with a love so deep, so profound, it made her heart ache with a sweet and sudden joy. "I promised you a family," he whispered, pulling her into a gentle, careful embrace, mindful of her bruises. She leaned her head against his chest, listening to the strong, steady beat of his heart. "But you gave me a purpose that goes beyond any crown or any bloodline. You showed me what it means to lead with the heart, not just the fist. You gave me a reason to be a king, not just a ruler." He held her there, a quiet, unmoving rock in the center of the chaos as his warriors stormed the throne room to secure it. They saw their king, not gloating in victory, but tenderly holding his mate, and a reverent silence fell over them. This was the quiet after the storm, the moment to acknowledge the cost of their victory and the depth of the bond that had won it for them. She was safe. She was whole. And she was loved.
Chapter 24. The Dawn of a Queen. Weeks later, they return to the Citadel not just as victors, but as legends. The Vargr Pack, leaderless and broken, had sworn fealty to the Lycan Crown. Alpha Marcus and the traitors of Silvermoon had been brought before a council of alphas and had been served a swift, unmerciful justice. Peace, a true and hard-won peace, had settled over the mountains. The great hall of the Citadel was filled to overflowing. Every Lycan lord was in attendance, their banners hanging from the high stone walls. A humbled delegation from the Silvermoon Pack, now led by a new, honorable alpha, stood among them. This was not a mating ceremony. This was a coronation. Elara stood beside Kaelin on the great dais, not in a simple tunic, but in robes of midnight blue velvet, the color of his fur. She felt the eyes of the world on her, but for the first time, there was no judgment in their gaze. There was only awe. Kaelin, his presence commanding the absolute attention of the hall, took the ancient, heavy crown of the Lycan Kings from its pedestal. But he did not place it on his own head. He turned to face his people, his voice ringing with a fierce, undeniable pride. "For generations, we have been led by a king," he declared. "A single wolf who bears the weight of our future. But one wolf, no matter how strong, can be blinded. One wolf can be broken." His golden eyes found Alara's, and a silent, loving message passed between them. "Today, that age ends," he turned to Elara. "I swore an oath to lead you, but this she-wolf, she has taught me that true strength is not in singular rule, but in a perfect union. She faced down her own demons and saved us from ours. She is not a consort to a king. She is the other half of this kingdom's soul." Before the astonished eyes of the entire Lycan court, he knelt. He held the crown up to her. "Behold," he said, his voice ringing with a love that was its own form of power. "Elara, the unbroken, my mate, my equal, your queen." A heartbeat of stunned silence, and then the hall erupted. The roar of approval was a physical force, a wave of sound that shook the very foundations of the mountain. She took the crown, her hand steady, and placed it upon her own head. As the cool, heavy weight of it settled, a strange and wonderful warmth spread through her core. It was a feeling she had only ever dreamed of, a gentle, fluttering sensation deep within her, the faint, miraculous beat of a new life. The curse was gone, her body was healed, and the goddess, or perhaps her own indomitable will, had finally granted her the one thing she had been denied. She looked down at Kaelin, who was still kneeling before her, and placed a hand on her belly. She saw the question, the dawning miraculous hope in his eyes. A secret, joyful tear slipped down her cheek, a tear not of sorrow, but of a happiness so profound it felt infinite. She had been told she was damaged. She had been called broken. But she was never either of those things. She was a queen, forged in the fires of betrayal, waiting for a war to reveal her true strength. And now, she had everything. A king who knelt before her, a kingdom that roared her name, and the impossible, beautiful beginning of a family